Enda, you are now entering a space for black history, a voice for the voiceless, the Harbinger on the Line Revolution, a marriage of chillers and platform that will last longer than it, girl's marriage. Welcome to Black Excellence. Do not fear, for if you do, just sip on some grandeur. And if you still do, ask ourselves, what would Mapapunzi do? Pagama chila, itlesha lefiki. Ungo yigi, even when they ask you, how sabi yini? Do not fear, for if you do, just say, anistivi. This is the medicine of censorship. This is the pill. Which one is that one? Podcast and chill.
We must talk with convictions. We mustn't just say things because I don't know bolela man. Nona labato wano bolela. Udo talusa wagorwa. I mean, there's a party that runs one metro in Tshwane. The DA, to be exact. They've got a something in their head that they think they can lead South Africa. Mara ba kolota Eskom tshelete ya mhlazi. Ba tlo ikhona
byang. Oh, shocking.
You know? O nyaka o leader South Africa ntho e kgolo e ka project e kaka
So before we start, I don't want to mess this up. How do I introduce you, Ntate, Chief, Comrade?
You can just call me by my name.
Just pull him up.
Yeah. Doesn't sound right.
No, that's disrespectful.
It doesn't sound right.
I'm easy like that.
How does the comrade name, like, why do you guys call each other comrade?
No, they just call me by name.
Yeah, but I'm saying comrade, how does that, why do politicians call each other comrade?
Well, because comrade means friend.
Mm. Oh, camaraderie. It's from the word camaraderie.
Yes.
Oh. And then chief, where does the chief one come from?
Well, it was just our cadres in exile.
Cadres.
They would refer to each other like that, sometimes based on the position or station that one occupied in the organization.
So we've been using it wrongly because I call everyone chief. Like, hey, chief.
No. Now it's part of the... ecosystem.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Henda Avarimini, please welcome the current national spokesperson for the ANC, Ntate Comrade Chief Pulemabe. Thank you so much for coming through, man. We've been wanting to have someone from the ANC, from government to join us, you know, and just have a conversation.
Yeah.
So we're so glad that you came. We appreciate your time. But before we get into all of that, I've always wondered, what does a day in your life look like? Like, what do you get up to? Like, when you wake up, what do you do?
Well, it depends. But if it has to do with ANC work,
yeah,
I have to go to the office, meet with the team.
So what time would you wake up then?
Well, I usually start at 5.
5.
And then we'll be at the office around 8, half past 8.
You don't have breakfast, nothing?
Before COVID, I will have chowed at home.
Oh, okay. What are we chowing at home?
Easy stuff.
Porridge.
Bacon. We can't eat pap in the morning. So I mess up our day.
No.
So what about Limpopo?
But in Limpopo, we have breakfast, pap for breakfast, lunch, dinner.
No.
Yeah.
No, I eat normal breakfast. Yeah. Eggs, bacon. Whatever is prepared.
Yeah. Okay, then you get to the office at 8.
Then I get to the office. So before COVID, we'll be at the office around 7:30. And then we do analysis of how the ANC has been covered in various publications and various mediums.
Oh, wow.
And then based on that, we then develop a plan for the day. We say, okay, this issue needs us to respond. Or this one needs us to have an interview or a bite. We need to further clarity on this.
Mm.
And then we circulate the clippings to our national officials and then talk to relevant committees of the ANC to solicit comments from them.
Now it's like 2, 3, 4. The day is gone.
Basically, when you are a national spokesperson, during the day, you don't even have enough time, sufficient time to even read the papers that you must respond to. Because half the time you have to deal with requests for interviews, you have to clarify. But also because you're in the leadership of the organization, you also have to make time to deal with other issues.
But don't you have a team for that?
We have got a team, but the team does technical work. You see, the team, the social media team will make sure that whatever statement, say we've done a statement, they have to make sure that they push it across our digital platforms, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got...
Man, I didn't even know you guys on social media. I must follow.
No, I must follow. But do you get the true responses from social media, or they give you all the favorable responses?
No, we do.
Because people say some nasty things sometimes.
No, we do. We do. I mean, we get serious beatings at times. Just to demonstrate a point and illustrate one critical path we took. When we took over DIP in the ANC, they had almost 400,000 followers just on Twitter. So in the 4 years that we've been at the helm, we've been able to push that number to over a million.
Wow.
So the ANC has got now over a million followers. And the good thing about our followers on Twitter is that we don't have bots, unlike other political parties.
That you've purchased. Yes.
No, we don't have bots following us. We're followed by Simon Makaringe, who stays in Giani, has got identity and all of that. You know, you are followed by Pilades Tole, who stays in Mafikeng. You know, so we do profiling. We profile our social media followers.
Wow.
Because the social media played a very important part for us when we went to the 2021 local government elections.
For real?
Yes.
Because a lot of people say, like, for example, a certain party will only win the elections on Twitter, but not in real life. So
because that becomes the case, because they are mostly followed by bots.
Agree
bots are about human need.
Yes.
So they can't do real things.
Yeah, it's not real people.
No.
So back to your day. When do you get time to speak to the president? Do you speak to him every day?
No. It would be impossible.
Yeah.
When there are briefings of the ANC and or when he's going out to conferences of the African National Congress, as he gets there, part of the briefing I give him is the briefing around the media. And okay, Chief, here are the issues in the environment.
So you read the room for him.
Yes. So we do the lay of the land. But what I can tell you is that the president of the ANC is very accessible.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't have a struggle of reaching out to him. If there are issues that I don't understand and I want him to clarify, I pick up a phone and give him a call and say, okay, here are the things that I'm confronted with. How should we approach this? Not just him. I mean, I talk to all officials of the ANC. Yeah. I talk to everyone in the leadership. I talk to structures of the organization in provinces and regions.
And with all the statements that you put out, does he approve them, or is it you with your gut feel, because that's what you are paid to do, you take?
No. You can't run a political organization or communications machinery of political organization with gut feel.
Okay.
It's going to be...
I'm
going to put you under.
You'll be in trouble.
No, I say SMS.
Yeah.
No, just WhatsApp. No, it's quite involved. But the president doesn't have to be involved in that exercise. So the NEC, the National Executive Committee of the ANC, confers that authority to the national spokesperson.
Yeah. During COVID, during the family meetings, were you writing all those statements that he was saying?
No, he was doing the guy. Remember, he's the president of the republic. He has got a team. Communications team of the presidency.
Yes.
So what we will do, or what we will be responsible for ourselves, is to really deal with communications in the ANC.
Oh, so it's two different things.
Yes. So it's just that we've got a resolution of the ANC that says the president of the ANC shall be the president of the country.
Of course.
Where we govern.
Yeah.
So that's why with Thabo Mbeki, he was president of the ANC and was president of the country.
Country, yeah.
Jacob Zuma was president of the ANC and was president of the country. Mm. Now with Ramaphosa, same story.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, okay. But let's talk about you. How was it growing up in Phalaborwa?
I was raised by my grandmother.
Mm. Weren't we all? I think we were all raised by our grandmothers.
Yeah. She was the first African woman to work at the Phalaborwa Mining Company at the time.
Wow. And it was white owned, ne?
Yeah. It was owned by Rio Tinto. It was a copper mine.
Oh, yeah.
So growing up there, seeing her struggles and understanding certain things basically inspired what I would later become as a young person.
Mm.
The one significant experience I recall, which really troubled me for a long time, was when I was 9 years old, in 1989, and she was going to be given a watch for having worked for the mine for 25 years at the time, if I recall.
Oh.
Then they gave her a citizen watch engraved with her name, S.S. Mabi, Sophie Scaly Mabi at the back. Now, I think I was doing standard 2, 3 there.
Mm.
So sometimes a year or so, 1991 there, she lost this watch, which was a very important part of her life.
You know? I mean, 25 years of service.
But the watch was not worth the price. I mean, it's a citizen watch. From 25 years, watch.
Hey, imagine.
So that troubled me that time, man. But this is not correct.
Mm.
And I was to later recover the watch.
Mm.
And the recovery of the watch was so interesting because, it was it must have fallen, picked up by one of the church stewards.
Yes.
So, you know, that's when I actually started getting out of the idea of closing my eyes when I pray. So the church steward was busy preaching there. Says, well, you know, they buy me some out so many. So, I decided, this is busy. But, man, this watch looks feminine, man, and it's worn by a man. You know, as he was praying, I looked, yes, I saw that engraving.
So
I had to make noise. So, well, of course, I mean, I was beaten up a bit. No, I became a little hero.
Wow. Imagine a thief at church.
Because, I wouldn't say that's
normal these days.
You know, when I went home that day, I mean, even the meal had changed. I mean, from just on Ograle Pafelo that day, I mean, I was served with 2 pieces. So there was a bit of a... But beside outside that, this then made me recognize the need to be on the side of the struggles of our people.
So before that, you had never had any intention?
No, I was young. I was 9 years. I was nine years old. And then in 1990, I think Mandela was released at that time. Structures of the ANC were being unbanned. So 91, I became part of what was called at the time the ANC Pioneer Movement. And through that ANC, so the Youth League had a pioneer desk.
Okay.
So in our branch in Phalaborwa, I was part of the pioneer desk. So I headed them. So it was like a children's subcommittee. And then in 1992, we were to do what was to be known as the International Declaration on Children's Rights. And one of the things that we, coming from our branch in Limpopo, the Northern Transvaal at the time, were putting forward a motion on the right to learn.
Okay.
And in 1993, in Durban, when Mandela became was elected president of the ANC, he then affirmed the notion of the right to learn that effectively abolished the power structures of the ANC. Mm. So we now had to be integrated into the full structure of the ANC Youth League.
Mm.
So we participated in 1994.
Where were you in 94 when you came out? Were you there?
Yeah. I was young. Went to a boarding school called Mahoka. During school holidays, I would still participate in political activities at home. And was part of the campaign.
Mm.
The campaign People's Choice that really ushered in a new era in South Africa and made Mandela president.
What do you think when people say on Twitter, since you're very active there, that you was a sellout?
Well, I'm not very much active on Twitter. I don't think President Mandela was a sellout. He championed and steered the ship towards national liberation. He sacrificed his entire youth for the cause of our people. So those that say he was a sellout are sellouts themselves.
Mm.
They don't appreciate the history of struggle.
Mm.
You know, you see, in this country, the challenge you have is that you have got people who don't appreciate that for us, for me to be sitting with you today,
100%.
For everyone to now enjoy freedom of expression, it is entirely because of what our movement has done. We might not be driving populist agendas, making statements that you all want to hear, because we're a self-respecting organization. The statements we make must be about the things that we will be able to do for our people. We must talk with convictions. We mustn't just say things because, I mean, there's a party that runs one metro in Tshwane, the DA to be exact. They've got a something in their head that they think they can lead South Africa.
Maragolota
Eskom
Chelte Amklaas. Shocking.
Unaga leader South African do Huluka, Project Yekaga. And I would be deep slow, would Alexander Gamora, Rabo Palabo, Raite, so. Okolota Mabon. You know? I mean, Okasiri, Nana fella Mutarunya Guara school, Lumar, Apatel school fees.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you because we had Clement on the show recently.
Clement Moss.
Yeah, and he's also from Limpopo. And he was talking to us and telling us how he encountered like Buloi and stuff like that. Did you ever go through that in your childhood?
With what?
Like Uloiwa and.
I don't even believe in those things, you know. They are far from, I don't know, maybe it's because I grew up in a township, you know.
But they're prevalent in townships.
I get see mkhala na ke so babone ke go batho ba di bolela so that like a nga tshono ba spokesperson sa ba loya ke tsebe.
So once in a while you don't consult a medium or sango manyana.
Re batho ba kereke e palla ba ruti ri sha di docteng tsa mannete.
Mm.
Tsa ba le mabambiri.
Mm.
Go for this flu sangomeng.
Okay.
So you've never at all?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I hear people talk about that. People talk about witchcraft being prevalent and all of that, but.
So you would say you're more religious?
Well, my grandmother was a religious person herself. She came from the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the church of Meshalot Matreke. And because of the value system that she really implored on us, we grew up like that. We grew up as churchgoers. You know, every granny wants their grandkids to become pastors.
Yeah.
I went to Bible school. I did all the things that kids who came from religious families would do. I mean, during school holidays, to remove us away from smoking and all other things, they used to take us to religious camps.
So you'd never date a sangoma, even if you like her? You'd never date a sangoma, even if you like her?
No. I don't have issues with sangoma, so that it doesn't come across as if I've got issues with that section of our society. Those that practice it and do it and believe in it, as part of the traditional movement, they ought to be supported. You know, because it will be very irresponsible of us to sit here and want to undermine practices that others in our society believe in.
So if a sangoma comes up to you and does a calling, you know, because they do that sometimes.
How would
you? Yeah, like, not a calling,
a reading.
A reading,
yes,
yeah.
A reading.
How would you receive that? Like maybe you're on the road somewhere.
And they tell you to stop. Something is approaching.
No, I don't know. Maybe you guys must assist me with the streets where they go, because the streets I use, I never really come across.
No, they're everywhere.
No, but sometimes you could be there enjoying your meal at a restaurant and someone says, and maybe they're accurate and they're like, your grandmother who passed away wants to tell you this and this and that. You must go to the grave and do this and this and that. How would you take that?
Well, kind of thing. I think those are issues that you deal with when you are confronted by them.
Mm.
Because I've never been confronted by those, so it would be very unfair of me to want to create
a... We got a smart
that's
one.
That's a political answer.
Yeah, we got a smart one.
That's a political answer.
He's
trembling. Let's
talk about your love for journalism. When does that start?
Well, you know, when I was a young activist growing up in Phalaborwa, I used to write for a newspaper called Namakani News.
Mm.
But I do think that the editor of the newspaper didn't like me.
Mm.
But he wanted stories from the township, because I would go to town, shame, with my handwritten scripts,
yeah.
Kilo deliver articles, some local crimes. So I remember that man. I think his name was Andre. He would allow his dog to bite me just as when it was about to in Lome. Then I said, hey, man, but unyaga di turi zeke dalizon. So that is when my early life in journalism began. Mm. And some of the early stories I wrote was about my grandmother. Because when she passed on, I felt that her story needed to be known.
Mm.
You know, and I went as far as enforcing what would be called nationalization of mines in the ANC Youth League. When I was Treasurer General of the Youth League, I pushed for that, wrote a lot about that, even in the city press, using the story of my grandmother to make a reflection of how those that are mining in our communities are not doing enough to invest in social infrastructure,
mm.
in things that could be sustainable and all of that.
Mm.
So this part of her story enforced my life in the media. But when I finished when I matriculated, I was not going to study journalism. I was going to study political sciences.
Mm.
So I was accompanying my elder brother. So because I didn't know Pretoria quite well,
yeah.
coming from Limpopo. So sometimes fella said the kilos are not digis. I wanted to go to TNG,
yeah.
what is today called TUT, to go and study journalism.
Sure.
So I accompanied him. Then I'm sitting outside, so they must write an acceptance test. So I'm sitting outside. So this guy, Owabangwadisa, was picking them up. So he says to me, Ganduena, what's again? He said, I'm not coming here. I'm going to take this. I actually accompanied my brother. Let me see your matric results. So he checks my results. But you're going to get bored, man. Hey, unbeknown to me, my brother failed. Then I passed and I became number one of all the ones who were writing. Now I didn't even have a financial assistance. Already Alispan.
Yes.
So now let's go to TEFSA. When I'm online, if you are a TEFSA, no man, when I'm qualifying for TEFSA. No, I'm confused now.
That's like NESFAS.
Yeah. So when I go now, when I go home to report. So that's how I found myself studying.
Oh, it makes sense. That's why you're so critical of journalism right now. Ne?
I'm not quite critical of it. I embrace the gender journalism. And my team will tell you, I interact a lot with young journalists. I did journalism first as an undergrad, and I did postgrad.
What do you think of journalism now?
Well, my thinking of journalism today and broadly media is that, and to be critical of yourselves, is that I don't think that we are giving our people sufficient content to empower them and to allow them to make the right choices and decisions. With social media, most of the things that run around are fictitious, is people's feelings and all of that.
Mm.
The youth of today... don't like reading as we did in the past. Even when I stayed in a cottage in Melville working at the Mail and Guardian, the one thing I owned was a kist with my books. Even when I was in TNT as deputy president, dating the woman who would later on become my wife. The one thing I had in my wardrobes was stacks and stacks of newspapers. The only time I had a TV is when we had agreed with my girlfriend at the time that she's now moving with me to... Because, you see, when you're deputy president, they give us these big houses.
Yeah.
And I don't move together. So the last TV I remember was a black and white TV.
Yeah.
Of my wife, because we're too really royal gomzana, really segamon.
Wow.
That's the only thing I never really worried about stuff. I never worried about having a car.
Yeah.
You know, at the Mail and Guardian, they insisted that I take a license, even to a point of sending me, so in just by around Melville there, sending me there to go and do driving lessons because. I was using a proper taxi. I was using a meter taxi. So when I go to a story, I was going to do a story in Venda. Yeah, proper. I would come back with taxi slips.
Wow.
Now they say, hey, Mara, this taxi slips. I grow one and I go to Spanning. They say, Lega, unali di card tell us that the risks. Zakhale, neinali mungala price. Uyeze. So, we get to keep a lot of honor. So, I keep on arguing, I short time and I want to read a story. No, feel like we are 200 Pretoria to social media.
Smart.
So I said, hey, no. We need to get a license. That's how I got a license.
You know, crazy.
You know, I never thought I will work. I mean, even when I was going to my work interview at the Mail and Guardian, actually a colleague, there was one senior journalism student who was now working at the Mail and Guardian told one of the guys, Moloto Mutap, who's now the spokesperson of parliament, that, hey man, there's an opening for internships at the Mail and Guardian. You guys must apply. So Moloto was a friend. I'm a deputy president in the SRC. He keeps on insisting, hey man, not apply. He said, Moloto, no, I'm not going to apply. I'm not a junior feature, so I'm in service. So Moloto did for me, but reads Moloto for an interview there. Sadly, I was the only one appointed there. So now they called me. Using our old Ericsson phones. When we get to campus, where's Morao campusing? That very day, they called me. Bamboza, you need to come and start next week.
Yeah.
Hey. And now I'm with Morao. You know that set party. I don't know what to do. So, hey, uduji jigata aba? Hey, it was Sunday. Wakori, dimana reselora possibility go wara abijwa.
Yeah, abijwa.
So, hey, go idea bang. So now I'm sitting with him. We're going to the canteen.
Yeah.
I decided to break the news. You know, tomorrow is Zoela Oakland Park.
Eh.
Hey, Odi, I'm no. Okay, I told my Mail and Guardian. I get back now. Or the darbe rikisha motor home one.
Eh.
I know. Maybe I'm full of Arabic.
And he's still waiting for the call.
No. But he understood what happened, you know, at the time. A good friend, we're still friends even today.
Yeah. You
know? So I went there, worked for the Mail and Guardian, did the 1 year internship program.
Now that's amazing. So you had a question, eh?
Yeah. Have your opinions on the nationalization of mines changed?
Well, my opinions on the nationalization of mines have not changed. I still believe that. Through the state taking an interventionist approach, we can be able to broaden the scope of ownership for our people. The Youth League's call for nationalizing the mines at the time was more about talking for those communities, making sure that they could have greater benefits. Nothing. The country. So we were fighting a correct battle. And what did the ANC government do? It then decided to establish a state-owned mining company, made some interventions through the mining charter to allow for bigger ownership of those communities. Mm. And for us, that was a middle ground. And we said we can live with this middle ground. What we now need to do, we now need to make sure that our people are given the right skills to be able to participate in that area of our economy.
That's a good statement, that one. Yeah. How long did it take you to practice that one?
No. Hey, we can hear.
No.
Why is it that you have? Why can't you just say what's in your heart instead of like?
You want to speak like that around the braai?
Yeah,
I do. This is how I speak. You can ask, you can ask my team. I speak like that
because I think that's where you guys lose us, or maybe it's just me.
When you spoke about your grandmother, you didn't have that register.
Yes.
No,
it was like personal.
No, but because you are asking me about a matter of public policy.
No, your opinion, your personal opinion.
Yes. No, I was expressing my personal opinion on a matter of public policy. So it's a view that even if you ask me tomorrow, just as I come from out of bed, I'll still say give you the same answer. Mm. I don't think that I'm a politician.
Mm, mm.
No, I think I'm an activist. I decided to be on the path of the revolution in the same way that you comrades have decided to be in the media space and do what you're doing.
Of course, yes.
So I'm not a politician.
Do you think the media space pushes propaganda?
Well, it does to some extent. To some extent, if they report accurately. You see, there is the notion of agenda setting is there.
Okay.
You know, we can't avoid that.
Sure.
And once we've got the notion of agenda setting alive, something that we accept that agenda setting is alive, then it follows that we accept that the media can also propagate in its own drive of message.
Because that's where they've lost me most. I haven't watched or consumed any traditional media in so long.
No.
Because you have that in the back of your mind, like, they're pushing propaganda.
You sense a bias.
Yes. You know
what I mean?
Yes.
It's always like anti this,
whatever,
a government or ANC or if it's 702 or whatever. You always sense a bias.
No, they make a determination of the narrative they want to drive. So I agree. If media outlets were the same, it means they'll all be writing the same stories. You can read three newspapers, maybe read Business Day, read The Star, read Sowetan. Same articles about the outcomes of the National Executive Committee of the ANC, different angles. Or urata just state capture. Or unyaga jamaboni. Or wolaga policy conference ANC. But they are writing about the same meeting.
So if something damning about you, like, were to come out and a journalist were to write it, would you not use your power to kill that story?
I don't have to kill stories. I'm not a murderer of stories. No. You see, when you are a leader and there are indiscretions reported or rumored about you, your duty is to give accurate facts. To give facts and not try to, you see, if you try to kill, it doesn't, I don't know, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I have, in my short life, I've faced things that were storms. And I still went and responded to those. I never said I can't respond to this or that. No.
Yeah, what was happening when you were accused of sexual assault?
Not assault, harassment.
Harassment, yes.
It was a case brought up by my PA at the time. A panel was then set up in the ANC to adjudicate over the matter. Upon adjudication of over the matter, facts presented, the case was thrown out and I was taken back to work.
Where's the young lady now?
She's there. She's fine. I've made peace. I've forgiven that episode in my life. I talked to her. I don't have issues.
So how did you guys get to the settlement of like 50,000 rands? There was some money settlement.
No, we never had settlement. We never. I saw it in the press.
Yes, I saw that too.
So, maybe that's
50,000 rands.
Because I never got there.
Yeah, I think you killed that one. Eh?
Yeah, no, 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 no.
50,000 times.
No, but let me explain. I think it might have had to do with some HR related stuff.
Okay,
it had nothing to do with me and the case.
Yes,
no,
yes.
It was an HR related matter.
Yeah,
but I've made peace.
Yeah,
I have put that chapter.
Yeah.
Episode of my life behind me. I've learned certain lessons out of that.
Beautiful.
You know, and moving forward.
Run me through like your time during the ANC, because you said you started there before what was now, what we know now as the ANC Youth League.
No, no, there was a desk.
Yes, so, the desk, yeah.
So the desk was called the Pioneer Desk.
Okay. Then you get to the ANC Youth League.
No, now. It was in that. It was a subcommittee of the Youth League.
Oh.
Yes. Wow. Yeah.
So when do you meet Julius and them?
Well, as we grow up in the ANC Youth League, actually, my first interaction with Julius was quite interesting.
Mm.
I was interviewing him for a story when I went for the Million Guard.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. When he was elected president of COSAS.
Okay.
One of his very first stories to be out there in a national paper was the one I wrote in the Million Guard.
Wow.
And then we established a rapport.
Mm.
You know, when he was coming to stay here, settle here as a president of COSAS, we had a common friend. His name is Charlie Squatty.
Mm.
He comes from Palabura. He was a senior leader. He's our senior leader there. So I said to him, "No, when you are in Joburg, you must meet with Pule. He's from the Pioneer Movement.
Mm. Mm.
So he can show you around the streets there."
Oh, I see.
And we became friends, you know, became family.
Mm.
You know, we saw our kids grow. We went to each other's family funerals.
Mm.
We celebrated our birthdays together.
Wow. You know,
so.
And then now when you become a spokesperson for the ANC, I think it was around Zuma's era, ne?
Yeah.
What was going on in there?
Well, when the National Executive Committee of the ANC took a decision to appoint me, because the ANC is empowered to select from within his ranks one person who must become the national spokesperson.
So
the NEC then, out of their own collective wisdom, decided that I should be national spokesperson for this term.
Yeah, I like Zizi Kote. He's a rock star.
Oh, party. You'll see him at the July.
Last time I was with him at Tabu.
With the hottest girls.
Yeah.
He probably had hot girls around.
Yeah. You not so much, ne?
No. I'm easy.
How is the relationship like with Zizi Kote when that happens?
No, we're fine. Okay. Yeah. Zizi is a brother. He's my leader. He's a friend.
Mm.
Yeah, he led me in the youth league.
Yeah.
He served the youth league as its spokesperson, and he also served as an NWC NEC member.
Yeah.
So he's my leader.
How are the parties he invites you to? His parties probably throws the best parties.
Ah, well, you know, I'm not a party person, so I'm easy like that.
Oh, you don't go to his parties?
Well, if invited, I go, but I don't go out to look for invitations.
Hey, if you don't get it, it's my invite. Political mode, don't flee.
Let's talk about your weight loss journey. When did you decide, you know, I gotta lose weight, man?
Ah, you know, losing weight, it's something that you want to look good, man.
Mm,
you know, and when you are chubby, sometimes you say, "Ish."
So you were bigger than this, like a lot bigger.
Yeah, you say, "Man, I like that shirt, but ish."
So
I took that decision that, you know what?
I heard you stopped drinking, you stopped smoking.
Yeah. I stopped drinking and smoking for just almost a decade.
Wow. Were you a heavy drinker?
Well, I was a youthful drinker.
Mm. Heavy youthful, all right.
What's youthful? Like, if you've gone out, how much are you drinking?
Yeah. It's heavy, but youthful.
The way you
one
have
bottle,
drink.
Two bottles.
Yes. And what were you into? Like, whiskeys, beer, gin?
Ah, Tata Zonke.
Tata Zonke, ne?
But more whiskey.
Yeah. And you never did jogging, nothing. You just stopped those things, ate healthy.
No, I do a lot of walking, which I still do even now.
Okay.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. And then why do you think young people are not interested in politics as much as maybe previous generations?
Well, I think because the opportunity market has grown, it's so vast. There's so much to do now. In the past, there was very little activity. You know, so actually, the political space almost became your extramural activities. You know, the cause for freedom, for our people to liberate themselves, that's what really obsessed everyone. I mean, who wouldn't want to fight a system that said if you go to Johannesburg, you must have an ID?
Sure. Of course.
You know, who wouldn't want to fight a system that confined you only to the homelands and said you must get a letter from authorities before you could drive out of your township or village? Who wouldn't want to fight a system that chose which school you must go to and barred you from going to school in town, even when you afford it? Who wouldn't want to fight a system that determined which health facility you must use as a black person? So all those things combined, your separate amenities act, your dealing with homelands, Bantu education.
So you think right now, as the youth of today, we don't have any cause to fight for, like you guys did?
I don't think that there is still a lot, but I think because the opportunity space has opened so much, for a young person to go to a branch meeting of the youth league and go into a flea market, they rather go to a flea market, or they rather go to, what do they like doing these things a lot, Kokalaga Estate Expo. So what we need to do, having made that observation, is that we must begin saying, how do we incentivize these young people to understand that participating in political organizations is what will help them shape their own communities? Because you see, the work we do in the ANC, it's not about ourselves. It's about the people. So if the people don't participate in the things that we are doing, they run the risk of not being able to influence how we shape society.
I don't know, man. I could be wrong, but I think for me, it's just, it feels like it's just all talk, because there's no change. We don't see any change. Even if we do participate, like you are saying, we do engage. But it just seems like...
No, but McG, it's not true that there's no change. In 1994, before 1994, a young black man like you wouldn't be running this program here. The fact that you and I are sitting here today and having this conversation is an appreciation of that change. You see, the roads you see, I mean, just here behind you, Morivoniamu, the Democratic government fixed this road. Now you have got a ring here that takes either you go to Bloemfontein or you go to Pretoria. These things were not there.
Have you seen the potholes?
No, but when you look at the potholes, also look at Rea Vaya. Also look at Riverside. Don't look at the potholes alone and limit the life of South Africa only to potholes. No. Look at Cedar Road and what is happening there. Look at Lanseria Airport and what is happening around Lanseria. Look at the many developments that the Democratic government has established. So that as we count the number of potholes, we also count the developments that have been done. Just yesterday, Comrade Mbalula was unveiling one of the 100 locally manufactured electric trains, passenger trains. Have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
You see? But you saw potholes. So there's a lot of other things that are happening which you comrades are not seeing. So there's a lot. So it could be that in certain instances, they are failures. The ANC is always the first to accept where it has not done things right. We say that. Where we've got corrupt cadres in the movement whose hands are found in the till, we act decisively. We've even now taken a decision that if you are accused of wrongdoing, you must step aside.
You're saying so?
Yeah. You as a South African, citizen, not the spokesperson of the ANC, just as Bule Mabe. 14 years.
Ntate.
Ntate. But he said we must call him by his name. Oh, but yes, Ntate, yes. Bule Mabe. Mm. 14 years of load shedding. Eskom, hundreds of billion rands in debt. I'm very frustrated. I lose like 5 hours. And it doesn't seem like load shedding is a thing that's going to end tomorrow or the next year. Because I've had 14 years to fix it. It's not fixed. What are your frustrations as a South African who loses 5 hours of electricity a day, literally today? What are your frustrations on that?
I am as frustrated as you are. Load shedding affects me. Before I came here, I had a briefing with broadcasters around the statement that the ANC issued.
Yeah.
I share the sentiments echoed by the by my organization, the ANC, in that statement. Load shedding leads to serious economic turmoil. People lose jobs because they are... if you run a small eatery that depends on energy for you to prepare your chips, fish, all of that, chances are that if we don't create some predictability of sort, by the time we get out of this stage six, your business could have closed down. So that's the one. So we are all frustrated. We share the frustrations of all South Africans.
When last did you experience load shedding?
Every time you experience it, I experience it.
So you don't have a generator?
No, I'm experiencing load shedding the same way that any other South African is experiencing.
It costs 10,000 to get a generator. You're telling me you don't have that?
Well, actually, there are other means. You know, you can have solar panels, you can have other things.
Exactly. You don't have that?
Well, we try. We've got other alternative sources.
So you haven't experienced load shedding in a while?
No, no. I experience it.
Yeah.
Remember, even with the alternative sources, you do experience load shedding.
Yeah. And I find that hard to believe. Do you believe that so?
No, I don't believe it. How do you feel when, I remember I saw a tweet by Sizwe Gomo saying, this is how Sizwe lose umbuso as Abantu Abamnyama. Essentially, this is how black people are going to decide to try a DA out or an EFF out. Because it's literally like, guys, how could we mess up such a basic thing like electricity? Like, you know, when foreigners come from different countries, come here, they're like, oh, you guys don't have electricity for like 5 hours a day.
What is that?
They don't understand it. And this is how, like, how do you feel when it's, you read such things? And this is how a lot of us believe, because it's like, yo, we would rather vote for white people and have electricity so that we are able to run the businesses, fix the economy of the country, employ and fix the unemployment rate of the country. How do you feel as an ANC member when you read such things? Because people are fed up, including you. You just said you're fed up also.
Well, I don't know. So you say you'd either try a DA. Yeah, go to Damabo on a Kwa. They inherited Chuan.
But us, we're owing 400 billion. ANC is owing like 400, oh, not ANC, but Eskom. Owes like almost 400 billion in debt. And they still couldn't get their house in order.
No, I think we must look at this thing in context. You know, that we've got a problem here, electricity, is accepted. That our government must unveil a plan that talks to the practicality of the steps they will undertake to deal with this national crisis is also accepted. But what is needed by all South Africans is a clear schedule of timelines of when what will happen. If you say we are going to be intro, so we say, let's also look at renewables.
Sure.
Let's transition. Let's look at power ships. Let's look at nuclear as another source of alternative energy generation. Put timelines on all of these things. Indicate how much budget you are going to be needing to do that work.
Why wasn't that done 14 years ago?
Well,
over 400 billion rand spent.
You see, one of the things we must acknowledge is that we have got ailing energy generation infrastructure. And some of the things don't seem to have been predicted prior. But we now need, and then talking on your side, we now need a clear, focused plan. What our government must try to do is make sure that they don't put this crisis to waste. What do I mean by that? For instance, if you come up with a plan and say, I want to give every household, indigent household, solar panel in Soweto, for instance, or in all other townships or communities. But then say, in those communities, we will employ young people who are unemployed to become installers of these solar panels. We'll also establish an industrial park that either do assembly or the manufacturing of these panels.
But that's why we're saying, we feel like everything that comes out of your guys' mouth, it's all talk. Why isn't that happening now?
Yeah, like industrial parks, right? Then there's going to be a tender awarded and someone gets somehow, and you don't have control of that, but there's many...
Can I explain that it is not entirely true that it's all talk?
Mm.
We developed a program as the ANC, first having deliberated it, that we are going to give indigent households solar geysers. Go to Tuatua in Malutia Pofu.
Mm.
Those houses have got those solar geysers. It's an intervention we made. In 1996, we said as part of the reconstruction and development program, we are going to build houses.
Mm.
And this is now found in the Freedom Charter of 1955.
You know,
we've built RDP houses for people. Refaba Tudinko, people of Deep Sloot are being relocated in parts of the Deep Sloot community to Riverside. A few are fled. The Udo there now. Anchale Tre Bobo next. Few are key. So the Democratic government is doing a lot. Maybe what we are not doing more is speaking about the things that we are doing. Because if we don't speak about the things that we are doing,
but I think for me, I don't correct me if I'm wrong. I think people only react to things that affect them. So, for example, everything that you're talking about now, Deep Sloot, I'm not from Deep Sloot, so it doesn't affect me. I don't see that. I don't see the solar geysers or whatever. Just like you, load shedding doesn't affect you because you get into your nice car, you go to your nice house with your nice solar panel generator.
Let me show you something. How load shedding affects even a person who has got a generator.
Okay.
This is how it works.
Yeah.
La una le generator. Remotlagase o tsamaya. Ne? The generator kicks off.
Yes.
And then when the electricity comes back, you see that thing that happens between your electricity switching back from moving from the grid back to the generator, or vice versa. People lose appliances. So it's not true that when you have got a generator, we're now in Georgia.
But I'd rather lose an appliance than not have electricity.
No, but you are losing expensive appliances. Chesadi TV, Chesadi Echo.
Or life. Yes, someone tweeted on Twitter that someone that died because of they left the stove on.
Yes, it's dangerous. It's very dangerous.
And don't forget, you still have to pour petrol in the generator, which has gone up as well now.
No, everything is going
up. Let me tell you, having a generator does not make you a better South African. Actually, it's much more expensive than not having it.
But it's what are the alternative is there?
Alternatives that are there, you've got solar. I think what we need to do is that as South Africans, seeing that, and don't forget, I hear the 14-year-old story being spoken about. Appreciation must also be made that we have got our rising population levels are telling a very interesting story about our people. Hey, more what's South Africa. And when those numbers grow, they affect the greed. Wabana Kosoweto, unali the big room. So no irisa the big room. These big rooms maybe no irisa pule fail. Now suddenly pule unali girlfriend die. Never Spanish many other things. So I'm just saying we must look at this issue of electricity broadly.
But also that speaks to unemployment rates. In a normal country where the unemployment rate grows gradually in relation to the birth rates, we should have more people working. right? So it also speaks to the unemployment rate. Yes, people are getting born, but the economy is not growing because people are not getting jobs and people can't work. And how many times do we see on Twitter a graduate in the streets as well saying no jobs, etc.? So we can't just say people are giving birth, you know what I mean?
No, I agree.
Hence, there's not enough tax, you know, to cater for those people.
Well, I agree with you on the job issue. And by the way, the creation of mass employment should be undertaken, well, first by the government itself, by industry, but by our own injunctions, coming up with ideas, being able to innovate, leaving the task of creating jobs only in the hands of government might not entirely work.
Yeah, that's true. Know,
because
I agree with you.
You see, I say to my son, you must know that the challenge for your generation is that you must create employment for yourself. Our young people must understand that.
That's true.
They have to think about creating their own jobs.
That's true.
They must be suppliers of goods and services in their own communities. When we're growing up, and we wanted pocket money to do small things like go to a tournament and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that more likely more abanazaka. But I had one of my late aunts. She was a manager of a furniture shop.
Mm.
One day when I was standing outside at the gate, I see that there are these guys who move around back in the pampirza, the sale, the furniture. And get check up, get tip top, and my go goes pana tip top. I waited for her to come back. I asked her, but Baba, somebody shan't pampir jemu. I think at that time they were giving them 50 rand. No, man. Man, I see him. Gaurna lintu a tournament and Lebonuga on a chalet. Negir no, man. Garound their weight. Get idea, good through as my friend. And that's how we made ends meet, you know.
So what do you say for because you in media, you in journalism. So what do you say about something like this, like what we've created? Because it's a media house. As you can see, it's run by young people, for young people. What does the government do for us then after we've done that?
Because we've already, like, we didn't say, hey, government, we want to start a podcast. We started it. It started already. Employs over how many young black people?
30 people.
Over young black 30 people, right? We're flying to Ghana. Now we're flying to the UK. Without any government assistance, you go to the white banks. You know the banking sector. It's white owned. And we get the raw deals. Government is not helping in any way. And this is not us asking for a handout. The young black person has already done the work. And all we need is from a business propeller or an IDC or whatever. We don't get assistance.
Because it's only
envelopes and connections and utiwa smangmang.
Let me assist. And thanks for that observation. I think what I've noticed is that most of you comrades, while you have got the know-how, the wisdom, the hustle, sometimes you are not entirely aware of which government institution finances what you are doing. Let me give you a simple example. You have got the MDDA, the Media Development and Diversity Agency. It is established to finance exactly this. And I can make a sweeping statement. If I'm wrong, you can say so. But I'm sure amongst the institutions we have approached, I don't think we approached the MDDA.
But I know you don't speak for them, you speak for the ANC, right? Yes. So let's say we're ignorant. But we're the biggest podcast in Africa. They've never sent an email or to say, guys, we love what you're doing. No, you probably have bigger ideas. How can we help you reach those?
No, that is not their job. That is not their job. They are. No, let me come in. Okay. You see, the Media Development and Diversity Agency is set up for a specific task.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that task is to drive media diversity, is to encourage and participation of new entrants in the media space by making available financial resources. So we've got a number of agencies that are set up like that to be able to steer the transformation in the media space.
The reality is that those agencies are there.
Yeah,
but you need a brown envelope. connections. Yeah. No, and but nothing else. Otherwise, nothing will be done.
But what I'm saying, what, and also what we're saying is, if those agencies, ne, can't part of the responsibility be, okay, these young people don't know that we're here. Them approaching us to say, guys, you're doing an amazing job. Here's our services. It's what we do. We can assist in you. What do you need? We get that from private citizens and private company owners. Guys, you're doing an amazing job. What do you need?
Look, maybe as a takeaway, constructively, one will also just whisper loudly to some of those agencies that we can reach out to, that do more work, research, establish entities that are in the space that you are expected to support so that your support could be more pronounced and visible. Because if you don't do it, these entities end up not knowing that you either exist or these are the packages of support that they can actually get from you.
100%.
Yeah. We're the biggest podcast in Africa. If we got assistance from them and we let it out there be known, trust me, a lot of people would know they exist. Right now, not a lot of people know. Except for those who are connected.
No, that's fine. I don't entirely agree with the notion of brown envelopes and connection.
That is the reality.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's a reality I don't entirely agree to.
For sure.
Because we must insist that the state that we must preside over must be developmental and ethical. We must also insist that our people must assist us. They must not participate in corrupt activities. Mm. Because I get these envelopes, you don't get them in those offices. For corruption to take place,
yes,
it has to involve two parties.
Of course.
The corruptor, who is the one that takes up the brown envelope, to use your language.
Mm.
And the corruptee, who is now the recipient of the brown envelope.
Mm.
So corruption is enforced by participants in that immoral activity.
Mm.
So we must refuse. Yourselves as a young media outlet must be part of the people who expose brown envelope premiers.
Mm. I think for me, my take out from this interview is that you speak very well, you've got great ideas, but reality is it's far-fetched from what's happening in the ground, like on the streets, you know? And I think that's the problem, that a lot of young people are finding it hard to get into politics, because you guys speak a good game, but nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
Well, then
we have to come together as young people, as a collective, like you guys did during the struggle, and make a change for ourselves. Find which our is why solution. A podcast and chill exists, you know. Which is why we are fortunate enough that, with or without the government's help, we will still employ people and propel whatever we can do.
Maybe to come in there. You made a very correct point much earlier.
Yeah.
That people are most likely to see things not happening if they affect them directly.
Yes, yes.
You know, so I'm borrowing from that.
Of course.
I think coming out of this, it is the ANC is doing a lot.
Sure.
In government and also as an organization. It's a lot that the organization is doing.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that we need to consolidate our communications efforts.
Mm.
We need to make sure that we make information easily and readily available.
Because this helps. You know, coming so on that, this platform yes, really, really helps.
Big time.
So that our people could be further empowered. So,
yes. So
I take what you have raised constructively, and I will do my part to make sure that I push it out there. I'm tired now. Are you finishing?
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, sorry, man. Podcasting is long, sorry. Yeah. What do you think about Ntantalak's Operation Dudula?
Well, we have expressed ourselves that movements such as Operation Dudula have to make sure that in their operations and articulation, they do things well within the confines of the law.
Mm.
If they work within the confines of the law, they will find that many such social movements would be embraced.
Mm.
The difficulty is when organizations sometimes come across, appear, or end up operating outside the confines of the law.
Mm.
We are a law-abiding country. We are found on the strong foundation of the protection of life.
Mm.
So everything else that we do, even as civil society formations,
mm.
we have got to make sure that this culture of rights, of human rights,
mm.
that President Mandela and his generation left us with, is not in any way compromised.
Mm.
We do that.
Mm.
And I can tell you now, South Africa will become a better country.
Ntate Pule, thank you so much for your time.
Thank
in
you,
closing,
sir.
What I wanted to say, I think, I don't know if you can do this or someone in your team, but it would be great to open a dialogue more frequently. I hope, hopefully this is not just like a once-off thing.
No.
I think if we can have more of these discussions, share ideas, pose questions and you give us knowledge as well, we can use this platform to better educate young people.
And also if we can have a gateway to, you know, ministers, your Natim Tetwas and because it's like you guys are out of reach for us. If we can have them on these kind of platforms to talk to people who really want, have real questions, and they can engage the people on the ground.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be you, because I know you're busy.
No, that's fine. I will, trust me, I'm going to convey this message to them. I will facilitate with my office to make sure that in your next round, you have more of them.
Help. Fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ntate.
Okay.
Sorry for taking too much of your time.
Sir.
No.
And then the president, when is he coming on?
We can talk to him.
Hey!
Please, would like to.
I'm Venda as well, so you must tell him Vinda. Marmin. Thank you so much, Ntate.
No, thank you, man.
Thank you.
To advertise, email podcast@thisismechi.com. Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Mechi.
I'm assuming this doesn't end well.